one DJ to the next generation of programmers. We believe we all have something to teach and we all have something to learn. Knowledge should be free to access. Your support of KBOO ensures this. Help us build a city of artistic media makers. Long live DIY Radio and join us on Kickstarter today.
Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. Donate to the campaign and share it with your friends. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
It is absolutely true. Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter right now. Share that information with your friends and family and help KBOO continue to do what we've been doing for 50 years. But we want to do it better. We want to do it more. We want to make sure that we are able to continue to provide the training that is free to community members to come in and learn how to be the media. It's an empowering thing to do. It's an empowering thing to support and share the knowledge. Please spread the word of KBOO's Kickstarter campaign in your social media feeds today. Just do it right now. kboo.fm/Kickstarter. Share that with your friends and family through your social media feeds. It is 11:30 in the morning right now here at KBOO. And coming up next is an interview with Ursula K. Le Guin from the archives. Stay tuned.
If you're a science fiction or fantasy fan, then Ursula K. Le Guin has no doubt had a place on your bookshelves. For over 60 years, Le Guin was an overwhelming influence and was often described as one of the best science fiction writers to grace the genre. Here she is speaking at the Northwest Women's Studies Conference at Portland State University in 1988, discussing censorship, creativity, and being one of the first women published in Playboy in 1968.
I don't know of a case in which any of my books has been banned or censored. I know that it has happened that there are school districts in this country where my books and a whole lot of others from Mark Twain on, have been taken off the reading list. But I don't know of an actual case. Most authors don't. It just comes to their attention. The first time anything of mine was banned, it was my first name. My agent sold a story of mine to Playboy in 1968. And she submitted it as by U.K. Le Guin, and I didn't have a name yet. Left Hand of Darkness hadn't come out. I published some stories and science fiction novels, but I was not a name, you know. And so here comes a story by U.K. Le Guin, Ulysses or something, you know, and they accepted it. And they offered $2,000 for it, which even now is good pay, and in 68, you can imagine, you know. So we signed the contract, and then Playboy was informed with some glee by my female agent that my first name was Ursula. And they sort of panicked, and they wrote us a letter saying, we would like to publish this story with the initials as you submitted it because many of our readers are frightened by stories by women. And as a matter of fact, at that time, there had been one story by a woman ever published in Playboy. That was the little French woman that sucked her thumb. A very pretty girl. I can't think of her name. Anyway, I was the second woman ever published by Playboy, but I was not published as a woman. I accepted this in 1968. I would not, of course, now. I'm sorry I did. But my consciousness wasn't raised. I thought it was funny. And it is funny. The trouble is it's also significant. So, anyway, I thought I would read one paragraph from the story that Playboy published, Nine Lives, which has been enormously republished. And this kind of fits in with something I'll be coming back around to at the end. Now, this little paragraph I'm going to read. You don't have to know anything except that Owen Pugh is, they're on a alien planet. There's a very few of them. There's really just two guys there. And then a clone comes. 10 people, 5 male, 5 female, who have all been cloned from one individual. So they are more than, they are closer than identical twins. They are, as it were, 10 versions of the same person. But they come in two sexes. So, from his sleeping bag, Pugh watched the clones awakening. They all got up within 1 minute, except for one pair, a boy and a girl, who lay snugly tangled and still sleeping in one bag. As Pugh saw this, there was a shock like one of Libra's earthquakes inside him, a very deep tremor. He wasn't aware of this, and in fact, thought he was pleased at the sight. There was no other such comfort on this dead, hollow world. More power to them who made love. One of the others stepped on the pair. They woke, and the girl sat up, flushed and sleepy, with bare golden breasts. One of her sisters murmured something to her. She shot a glance at Pugh and disappeared into the sleeping bag. From another direction came a fierce stare. From still another direction, a voice. Oh, Christ, we're used to having a room to ourselves. I hope you don't mind, Captain Pugh. It's a pleasure, Pugh said, half truthfully. You see, Owen Pugh, he's a Welshman and fairly conservative, and he's shocked by incest. Playboy isn't. Nobody is. We don't censor incest. Okay, now the next time I was again asked to censor myself, I refused. I had come a long way. It was 1975. And I was writing, it was a talk I gave up in Seattle, and then it was going to be reprinted in a magazine I like a lot, Science Fiction Studies, very respectable science fiction magazine, edited by a very good friend of mine, Darko Suvin, a Marxist, socialist, not a liberal, a radical. Well, I will read you the first paragraph and the last couple of paragraphs, and then I will tell you about the censorship. And the piece is called American Science Fiction and the Other, and it's in Language of the Night. One of the great early socialists said that the status of women in a society is a pretty reliable index of the degree of civilization of that society. If this is true, then the very low status of women in science fiction should make us ponder about whether science fiction is civilized at all. Then I talk about, you know, the squeaking heroine and the heroine to whom, the girl to whom everything is explained, you know, and all these, remember, this is 75. Science fiction has come away from there. And I ended up, in general, American science fiction has assumed a permanent hierarchy of superiors and inferiors, with rich, ambitious, aggressive males at the top, then a great gap, and at the bottom, the poor, the uneducated, the faceless masses, and old women. The whole picture is, if I may say so, curiously, quote-unquote, un-American. It is a perfect baboon patriarchy, with the alpha male on top being respectfully groomed from time to time by his inferiors. Is this speculation? Is this imagination? Is this extrapolation? I call it brainless regressivism. I think it's time science fiction writers and their readers stopped daydreaming about a return to the age of Queen Victoria and started thinking about the future. I would like to see the baboon ideal replaced by a little human idealism and some serious consideration of such deeply radical futuristic concepts as liberty, equality, and fraternity. And remember that about 53% of the brotherhood of man is the sisterhood of woman. My editor said, oh, it's a great piece, you know, we want it. The last sentence seems superfluous. Could you cut it?
I said, no. This time I knew when to say no and why I was being asked. It takes a while. If Huck could learn, so can I. Okay, now, coming to Lathe of Heaven, which is a more recent event, I wrote a little piece for the Oregonian, which was published. That was in 1984, that they had this hearing in Washougal. I was told about it just the night before it happened by a librarian at the school who, I think, to whom it suddenly occurred, the author lives nearby and ought to know about this. Otherwise, you see, I never would have known anything about it, and this is why I am morally certain that my books, along with practically everybody else's who write seriously, have been banned over and over and over by librarians under pressure and by school teachers and school boards under pressure. The hearing was very interesting, and my forthcoming book, Dancing at the Edge of the World, which is a bunch of essays and talks and stuff, has that piece from the Oregonian, so I will read just a little about it. The case against the book was presented first at this hearing in Washougal. The man who was asking that it be withdrawn stated his objections to the following elements in the book. I noted these down, see, at the time. Fuzzy thinking and poor sentence structure. That one hurt. Oh. That made me madder than almost anything else. A mention of homosexuality. A character who keeps a flask of brandy in her purse and who remarks that her mother did not love her. He talked about this just a little bit. I found his sentence structure a little hard to follow, to tell you the truth. But can I stop? Oh, hallelujah. Yeah. He said it was, you know, it was demoralizing to kids or something. He had sort of an argument there. And then it seemed curious to me that he didn't mention the fact that this same character is a black woman whose lover slash husband at different times is a white man. I had the feeling that this was really what he hated in the book, but he was afraid to say so, but that was only my feeling. He also took exception to what he described as the author's advocacy of non-Christian religions. I never advocated no religion. And or of non-separation of church and state. His arguments on this point or these points were not clear to me. Finally, during discussion, he compared the book to junk food because it was science fiction. The English department of the school then presented a carefully prepared, spirited defense of the book, including statements by students who had read it. Some of them liked it, some of them didn't. Most objected to having it or any other book banned. In discussion, teachers pointed out that since it is the policy of the Washougal School District to assign an alternative book to any student who objects on any grounds to reading an assigned one, the attempt to prevent a whole class from reading a book was an attempt to change policy, replacing free choice by censorship. When the Instructional Materials Committee of the district voted on the motion to ban the book, the motion was defeated 20 votes to 5. The hearing was public and was conducted in the most open and democratic fashion. I didn't speak, as I felt the teachers and students had spoken eloquently for me. What was really going on, as far as I could figure it out, was not so much an attempt to ban one book. This was just one book among many. It was an attempt to change policy. And probably it was an attack on this freedom that the Washougal district, and I think most Washington school districts, have of that the student can object. And therefore, you see, it makes it almost impossible to ban a book. It's a lovely policy. I recommend it to all school districts. Okay, now, Here's poor old Lathe of Heaven. I'm really surprised that they're 20. And I was looking for one and I couldn't find one. I wanted to find Heather, the woman saying, when I know she's the swearingest person in the book, but anyway, I couldn't find that, so I picked out what I feel is the sexiest part of this book. This is Le Guin being steamy. Now, at the moment, we can't object to black-white, because at the moment, both these people are gray. I'm not going to try to explain this book, believe me. And what's more, they're married. George was a more urgent consideration. She was holding him as he held her. "You're worn out," she said. "You're upset. You fell asleep on the floor. It's that bastard, Hayward. Don't go back to him. Just don't. I don't care what he does. We'll take it to court. We'll appeal it. Even if he slaps a constraint injunction on you and sticks you in Linton, we'll get you a different shrink and get you out again. You can't go on with him. He's destroying you." "Nobody can destroy me," he said, and laughed a little deep in his chest, almost a sob. "Not so long as I have a little help from my friend. I'll go back. It's not going to last much longer. It's not me I'm worried about anymore, but don't worry." They hung on to each other, in touch at all available surfaces, absolutely unified, while the liver and onions sizzled in the pan. "I fell asleep too," she said into his neck. "I got so groggy typing up old Ruddy's dumb letters. But that's a good record you bought. I loved the Beatles when I was a kid, but the government stations never play them anymore. Censorship." "It was a present," George said, "but the liver popped in the pan and she had to disengage herself and see to it." At dinner, George watched her. She watched him a good bit too. They had been married 7 months. They said nothing of any importance. They washed up the dishes and went to bed. In bed, they made love. Love doesn't just sit there like a stone. It has to be made like bread. Remade all the time, made new. When it was made, they lay in each other's arms, holding love, asleep. In her sleep, Heather heard the roaring of a creek, full of the voices of unborn children singing. Well, I just wanted to say a word more about something that's very much on my mind and that was brought up by our ACLU speaker. Censorship by bigots, by the uptight, exists. Lord knows it exists. In this country, it exists mostly as attempts, effective or ineffective, at suppression of something that already exists, like banning a book. If we have censorship, an institutional censorship in this country, it's a lot sneakier. It takes place when a work is being sold or the author's trying to sell it, and it takes place even before that in the writer's mind, when a writer censors themselves because it won't sell. This is censorship by the market, and particularly by the salesmen. And I don't say salespersons, I say salesmen. Here's quoting from a letter I recently got from my agent, an old and experienced agent, handling a young author's book. She said, "I'm going to have trouble selling this, particularly in the mainstream, because, of course, the author isn't a name. And because the book is lacking in unsafe, salacious, drool-worthy sex. A drawback in the eyes of the all-powerful salesman." And that's true. This is just plain business truth. You can publish any porn anywhere in this country, particularly if you call it erotica. But you often cannot publish fiction that the salesmen perceive as not catering to male sexuality. This is one reason why, it's one reason, there are many, but it's one reason why a lot of women novelists publish in the women's presses. They're writing, it's not that the stuff doesn't appeal artistically to men, but it doesn't get through the salesmen. I am absolutely, categorically against censorship, government censorship, or any institutional censorship of any kind. I agree completely with the ACLU stand there. But could I say that, to put it just in those terms, censorship or non-censorship, is to falsify the issues a little bit. There are ethical issues involved, and they involve individual choice and rejection. We are capable of making choices. The books have to be there for us to choose, and that's why no censorship. But I think for people to refuse to read or to speak well of pornography based on a personal awareness that pornography, including a lot of literary erotica, a whole lot of it, is a symbolic act of sex. It is not an act of speech. It is speech used as sex, and it is sex based on a reader's pleasure that depends on the subjection, the humiliation, and the abuse of women and boys and girls. That is on rape. Now, if you think that anybody has the right to rape anybody else, then porn is okay. But if you don't, then I think you really have to think about your choices and about voicing them. It's not easy. Thank you for your patience.
That was Ursula K. Le Guin, renowned fantasy and science fiction writer, speaking at the Northwest Women's Studies Conference at Portland State University in 1988. Le Guin passed away on Monday, January 22, 2018, at the age of 88 at her home in Portland, Oregon. This is a production of KBOO Community Radio. To find more audio, go online to kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
And you have been listening to the Radio Zine on KBOO, KBOO, your very own community radio station, where for 50 years we have been getting the tools of media making into the hands of community members who are passionate to connect with listeners, to connect with neighbors and friends and family through either the FM signal, as we have done traditionally, and now venturing into new spaces with media, really following media where it goes and making sure that people just like you learn how to use it effectively to tell our stories, to connect our struggles, to make sure that the news is being reported from a perspective that makes sense, that connects, that is relevant to our lives. So right now, we are engaged in an online fundraising campaign. It's a Kickstarter campaign to help KBOO build a city of media makers. We have been doing it, and we want to continue to do it. We want to do it better. We want to do it more. We want to make sure that our free training program is accessible to everyone that needs it. That is to say that we can actually, with your support, with your help on this Kickstarter campaign, increase our ability to get into the communities and take this training into schools and community groups so that folks can learn how to create podcasts, to, again, voice your issues, voice your passions, and amplify your message. You can amplify your message with KBOO Community Radio. That is what we are here for. And it is important that you support this work. Your contribution to our Kickstarter campaign today is very, very important. It, in fact, helps us continue that free training program. It helps us get new equipment like our field recording equipment, HN Zooms, out into the hands of community members so that you can take it and gather that audio where it's happening. It's exciting to be a reporter, a citizen reporter, citizen journalist, a community media maker. It is important because you decide what's relevant to your life and you can participate through KBOO to make sure that message is amplified, is shared. So go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter, and you can find all more information about the campaign. You can also check out the amazing video that was produced by Derek Crooks about KBOO, and share that with your friends and family. It's an inspiring story. We are an inspiring organization. Please be inspired to support us. Do it at kboo.fm/Kickstarter. You can also, if you are a Kickstarter fan, you might have the Kickstarter app, go ahead and check out Kickstarter, where you can search for KBOO and you can connect us that way. But whatever you are able to do, please do make sure that you share this information with your friends and your family, because that's the way it's done. We are building momentum in this, basically halfway through our Kickstarter campaign, and we have about $13,000 left to raise. It's an all or nothing thing. So we really do need your help and encouragement to finish that Kickstarter campaign successfully on March 9th. So please do go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter right about now and see if you can kick down, you know, just a little extra money. $10 goes a long way. If you are able to become a member of the station, you can find all manner of incentive items. I know for a $30 contribution, you have your choice of a commemorative challenge token that is showing your pride in KBOO Community Radio and challenging others to really tell the truth, to be media. And that is also something that you can show at the Oregon Historical Society for free entrance, as we have partnered with them to make sure that all KBOO members can see the KBOO 50 Years of KBOO History exhibit there at the Oregon Historical Society, where we will be having that displayed until mid-July. You'll want to see that and know that you are a part of this amazing legacy that is KBOO. We have been going for 50 years, and we've been doing it with listener support, with community members just like you, making sure that we stay strong and we stay together. And when you have that important thing to share, maybe think about how KBOO has impacted your life by listening to reports from others who have learned the tools of the trade. And maybe you yourself are engaged in something right now that you're really passionate about, and you want to be able to create programming, to create content, to be involved as a media maker yourself. You know, KBOO's doors are open to you. We welcome new volunteers in every month, and we have a free training program for you to access. We just ask that you stick around and volunteer to use those skills that you have picked up in the free training program. And how is this all possible? It's all possible because of listeners like you. They have contributed. They have kept us on the air and strong. And that's what we're asking you to do right now with the Kickstarter campaign. That's kboo.fm/Kickstarter. Help KBOO build a city of media makers. And know that you are doing your part to keep KBOO strong and united, and to keep the next generation of media makers skilled in sharing those skills with others as we help each other find their way to share our stories, to tell our passions, to share our music, share poetry and theater. So right now, again, that one last time, KBOO.FM/Kickstarter, and share that with your family and friends on your social media feeds. Contribute yourself, and thank you very much for doing what you do to support KBOO Community Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Il Camille and Fritzois, Saturday, February 24th from 8 to 11 p.m. at the Tonic Lounge in Portland. From Los Angeles, MC Il Camille's divine mission is to uplift the world through Heirloom, her latest record. Fritzois's latest, the self-written and produced Avenue A, is filled with a soul-drenched sound that doesn't quite sit in a neat box of influences. The night also includes DJ sets by DJ Black Daria and DJ Shishi of Everyday Mixtapes. This is a 21 and over event. Again, that's Il Camille and Fritzois, Saturday, February 24th from 8 to 11 p.m. at the Tonic Lounge, 3100 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Community Radio is radio for the people, by the people. At KBOO, your neighbors, coworkers, and friends make radio so you can be sure that the issues they bring to you are the issues that matter. We believe strong communities invest in sharing knowledge with each other. Every month, KBOO offers free classes in the art of radio broadcasting so Portland can stay informed. Invest in future media makers and join us on Kickstarter today.
Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. Donate to the campaign and share it with your friends. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
KBOO Radio trains media makers. We believe community resilience happens when citizens learn how to make their own media. For the last 50 years, KBOO has trained thousands of citizen journalists to report on what goes on in the streets of Portland and far beyond. We know that with our expertise and your